Welcome in to the Whole Hog Podcast. Seth Campbell joined, we're like more than 6 feet apart now, Scotty, by Scotty Borderline. We're probably a good,
I'd say 10 or 12 feet.
Yeah, Connor Vanover and a half maybe between you and me right here. We have moved into our new studio after a few training weeks. Seth is now in control, so if things go utterly wrong, that's why. But Scotty Borderline, Seth Campbell, we are coming at you in what has become the dog days of summer. Things have slowed down considerably, but the Whole Hog Podcast is still here for you.
Things have slowed down so much, like I'm almost waiting until, this is Thursday, so I'm almost waiting until Thursday afternoon to watch TBT because Joe Johnson's
going to be
playing in it.
We're not almost. I'm excited about it.
I'm excited to watch him. I mean, I literally don't remember the last time I watched Joe Johnson play. And I mean, I didn't watch the Big Three.
Okay, I watched him play in the Big Three.
I'm just like, I can't for too long. But the TBT, like, it's pretty good basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, there are pros kind of littered throughout those teams. And I watched, was it the House of Pain yesterday beat Carmen's?
The Illinois.
It was like the Illinois alumni team plus Mike Dom beat the Ohio State team with Aaron Kraft.
And they
and
won it last
David
year.
David Leidy and, what's the guy's name? John Diebler. They were coached by Jared Sullinger. Like, that was a pretty good game. I love the Elam ending. I love it.
Okay, I was going to ask
it
you.
It adds so much intrigue and strategy.
So for those that don't know, define the Elam ending.
Okay, so in TBT, you play 4 9-minute quarters, from what I understand. And when you get to the fourth quarter, when you hit the 4 minute mark, they take the time off, they take the game clock out of the equation. And whoever is winning at that point, you just add 8 points to the winning team's score, and that becomes like the target. And so it's basically first team to whatever that target score is wins.
It basically takes away the whole fouling because you need to stop the clock and see if the other team is going to make free throws. You just lock down and play good defense so you can get the ball back and score. I think it's entertaining as well.
Super interesting.
I haven't watched any TBT this year, but last year around this time was the TBT tournament, and I remember watching Carmen's Crew, which is the Ohio State.
Yeah, Carmen's Crew. I couldn't remember the last part of their name. Did you see on their jerseys they've got the M marked out in
yes.
Carmen? That's such an Ohio State move.
Oh, my goodness, isn't it? All right, well, I think it's entertaining, so you can watch Joe Johnson. His team, Scotty, you know what his team is called.
Overseas Elite.
So if you want to watch Joe Johnson.
I think they're probably the favorite at this point since Carmen's Crew got knocked out. I think they were like the top seed.
There's a 16
since they were the
seeds.
Defending champs last year.
Yes, Carmen's Crew is number one. There's 16 teams, and Overseas Elite is number two.
I'll tell you what, though, that House of Pain, Mike Dom is a walking bucket. I think I saw a bunch of tweets yesterday from like Myron Medcalf, who covers college basketball. He was like, the Nets need to call him like yesterday. They,
right.
I mean, because they've got like next to nobody on their roster.
So why not?
Yeah. So
he can go join. Oh, wait, no.
Are
the Nets in the bubble?
I think so.
Yeah, that's right. Because
I think so, but like Kyrie's not there.
KD's not there.
Like, but like their core, if you want to call it a core, is like not there. Mike Dom's available.
Why not?
He went for like an easy 23 and what, like nine? He like three or four threes yesterday. He's really good. You talk about a guy that, well, he played at like South Dakota State.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he can fill it up. And I think who's calling these games is like Fran Fraschilla. Is calling some of these games.
I haven't watched any of the shows.
And he says that scoring for Mike Dom is just as easy as breathing. He does it every second of the day. I mean, you watch Mike Dom play, and it's pretty clear that he's not far off. Some pro team needs to take a shot at him.
Hey, and Joe Johnson can't stop playing basketball, even though he retired from
right.
the NBA. He retires and then goes and plays in the Big Three. And I think his team ended up finishing second in the Big Three last year, which the Big Three is – right up Joe Johnson's alley in a way, because you don't have to run up and down the court. You just play half court, and it's 3-on-3, and ISO Joe can go to work because there's not going to be five guys trying to guard him. But I'll be interested to see how he plays in the TBT tournament. All right, on today's basketball podcast of Mid-America, we got slightly sidetracked there, but we do encourage you to go watch a former Razorback on the TBT on Overseas Elite. Now, there used to be a Team Arkansas. Now, that was when the teams were bigger. There were more than just 16. They're kind of doing a smaller version this year because, well, there's no fans and stuff like that. But there used to be a Team Arkansas. Is there anybody else that you know of that is playing in this TBT tournament?
I know Cody Clark was. Cody Clark was. I hate that I didn't get to see him play. Cody Clark, I mean, you know this from when we drafted like our teams from like the last decade.
Which my team was better.
From 2010 on. You can keep saying that if you want. But Cody Clark's one of my all-time favorite guys to watch play. He's just super savvy. He's what, six, 6'7", 215, 220. He can handle the ball. He can shoot it from the perimeter. But he could also, he could also get to the rim whenever he wanted. I remember one of my favorite moments from Cody Clark is when Arkansas, I think, beat Kentucky at Kentucky. And I just remember him hitting a three from the left wing. And he let Kentucky fans know about it. They were right close to the floor. He was a dog. I also got an email that Joe Johnson is going to be playing in what is called the Five Tournament, which is a pro basketball invitational. It's going to be played in Las Vegas from July 19th to the 29th at the Orleans Hotel.
Uh-huh.
Joe Johnson is on a team called the Texas Five, and he's going to be playing with like Mike James, James White, probably not many other guys that you would recognize, but like there are six teams. There's a Chicago Five, Toronto Five, New York Five, Sacramento Five, and Miami Five. And so Miami is like headlined by Mario Chalmers.
Mario Chalmers should be nowhere near the basketball. Sorry.
Sacramento has Mike Bibby. New York doesn't really have anybody that jumps out at me. Toronto's, I don't know if you remember Reggie Evans or Carlos Arroyo. And Chicago has Nate Robinson.
Who?
And so I think it's all on pay-per-view, so you'll probably have to pay for it, which I don't know that I'm going to pay for that, but that just goes to show you that Joe Johnson just can't put the ball down.
Apparently.
He's going to go from the TBT to the Five tournament in Las Vegas. He's going to spend some time in Las Vegas. I can't blame him.
Why not? Again, he's a baller. As you said, he can't put the ball down. All right. We got distracted once again, but on today's Whole Hog podcast, we got some good stuff for you. Whereas sports are winding down, the Whole Hog podcast, we're bringing it to you. We've got basketball roster notables. So how we did football roster notables, we got basketball roster notables as well since their roster was released. Scotty did a great story on Hayes Myers. I've got a story coming on Destiny Slocum that'll be out very soon. We've got our newest segment, our school of the week, which I've got multiple schools. It's turned more into like a conference thing.
I studied all week.
Oh boy.
So you're in trouble.
I bet I am. And then Eric Hinsky, Scotty wrote about him and has some funny stories about him for Whole Hog's best baseball players. And we're going to recap some of those. You can comment on the story wherever you found it, whether you agree or disagree with how the Arkansas Democrat Gazette writers and some other people that we were able to talk to have ranked the top 10 Razorbacks.
I think it was a pretty solid list that's winding down. And I think the last three or four were probably, I think you could probably predict those if you paid any attention.
Right.
It was a fun list. You know, if we do top Razorbacks to play in the NBA, I would imagine Joe Johnson's probably going to be pretty high on that list if I had to guess. But
we've
discussed that, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that.
Fingers crossed that maybe some kind of sports will come back, but who knows? All right, and then we also have our clips are back, which means that I'm going to play some clips for Scotty, and Scotty is going to try and guess.
Guess that coach.
Yes, exactly. Guess the coach, and then who the coach is talking about, because I hate to be this guy, but I think all of them come from the same coach. This was a very entertaining press conference.
Okay.
All right. So now that we teased you all the way, let's start with the top. And all right, Scotty, what stood out to you from the Arkansas Razorbacks basketball roster?
Yeah, what stuck out to me probably stuck out to a lot of people. Connor Vanover is...
He is now considered a unit.
He is a giant. I mean, I think we knew that he was really, really big before this roster update. But so last season on the 2019-20 roster, he was listed at 7'3", 230 pounds, which is, I mean, really good, pretty good size. But you, I think you would still say he was kind of on the thin side. Would that be fair to say he was a little bit on the thin side?
Yeah, when you're 7 foot, what is he, 3?
Yeah.
Then you have to put on over 200 pounds to just kind of fill out your frame.
Right. So, according to this updated roster, he has added 17 pounds. So, he is now standing at 7'3", 247 pounds, which is really good. I think people wanted to see that kind of weight gain from him during his development year. And I think I think it's safe to say that Connor improved during his development year. So you couple the weight gain and just, you know, just filling out that frame a little bit more, like you mentioned, on top of, you know, he probably became a little bit better shooter and probably a little bit more skilled on the interior, if I had to guess. And so that added weight, you know, I think it's going to let him bang around a little bit more than probably he could have last year if he was available to play. So that's right off the top. That's a huge plus.
Yeah, something that I see that I'm just going to be curious about with Connor is he's not the most mobile guy ever. I mean, I remember Musselman talking about before the season started last year of he made everybody run a mile in under a certain amount of time. I think it was 8 minutes or something. And he said everybody except for Connor. He's like, there's just a 7'3" guy moving at under 8 miles. Just not going to happen. So I'm interested to see with the weight gain if he's still, you know, he's not the most mobile guy ever, but if he can still get up and down the court, make sure that he doesn't get beaten back on defense.
I still don't expect him to have to run the mile.
I wouldn't. No. I think that would kind of undo all of the weight gain that you've added if you're trying to make him run some more. But he'll be able to bang down low, you would think. I would like to get to talk to him again. I did that story on him. It's probably been over a month, 2 months now. Time's starting to run together, Scotty. But when I was doing that story on him, he talked about how, you know, when he was in high school, his dad would just make him these nasty ice cream, peanut butter, protein, which doesn't sound bad, but it's just shakes that would have over 1,000 calories in them. And he's just drinking those. I'm curious now that he has, you know, the University of Arkansas dietitian staff, see how he's working there. But I've seen videos of him working all off season, all quarantine, I guess that you can call it, when he went back home, when the student athletes weren't allowed to come back up.
Yeah,
to
it
campus.
Sounds like he ate pretty good at home. Kind of goes back to what Sam Pittman said when his offensive lineman came back. He was like, I know one thing, their mamas must be able to cook.
Well, I mean, he's in a family. I can't imagine. But his family, every single one of them, you know, his mom's a former basketball player for the University of Arkansas. His dad's almost as tall as her, which they're about like 6'6", and around that area.
Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah. And then him and his two other brothers are all over 7 foot tall. That's a lot of food that you probably have to cook for those five people.
No kidding. I'm like 5'11 on a good day and weigh like 155 pounds. And I mean, I feel like I can eat really well for a guy, especially at my size. I can't imagine what he's going through at home.
I have no idea. Okay, so flipping that around though, Scotty, who is the lightest scholarship player? Now, because there's a walk-on, Bryson Moorhead, who's 6'8", 160, which seems kind of like a bean pole to me.
Yeah, you add almost a foot to me and then add about 5 pounds, and that's Bryson Moorhead, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But the lightest scholarship guy that Arkansas's got, they've got Jalen Tate and K.K. Robinson both listed at 175. But I think Jalen Tate, compared to what he was listed at on Northern Kentucky's roster last year, he's added 5 pounds too since last season. Something else that stood out to me, Jalen Williams steps foot on campus and he's immediately the second tallest and second heaviest guy on the roster.
That'll be huge.
Yeah, that's a really good size freshman. I think you'd be able to do a lot of things with him, especially with his versatility. I was expecting him to be like, you know, maybe in that 225, 230 range, but at 245, mean, that's really solid. It's a really solid weight for a freshman.
That's a thick boy. Sorry, that's a TikTok.
And plus you get him in there with Dave Richardson in the weight room. I mean, he's going to mold that 245 into a good frame.
Yes.
So I'm excited about Jalen.
For sure. And that's 2 pounds lighter than Connor Vanover. Like, just for some reference. 2 pounds lighter, and he's, quick math here, he's 5 inches shorter.
I say that he's 245. I don't think that's going to affect his mobility at all. So
it'll be interesting. Scotty and I talked about it earlier in the week. We're not envious of Eric Musselman in the position that he's in, trying to get these guys playing time and keeping them all happy, which is good for you as the fan of the University of Arkansas. Bad for Musselman in trying to keep everybody happy. But this is a good problem to have, and an option to where, you know, how many minutes people are going to get is going to depend on Isaiah Joe and what happens in the draft, obviously, but also just how these guys perform in practice. It'll be interesting. We've kind of hammered that point a few times on the podcast, so we're not going to get into it right now. But once again, every time we bring up the roster, I feel like it's worth noting somebody's going to have to sit on the bench and not play a whole lot. And I don't think any of those guys that are listed there want to do that.
No, not at all. And I was kind of kicking around the minutes distribution, like, as the roster stands right now. And it's really hard. Like, just, you've got your 13 scholarship guys, and you've only got 200 available minutes per game to divide among those guys. And it's really tough. And so right off the top, you start with Isaiah Joe. So what's the minimum number of minutes you want to see him play? And, like, I don't feel like you want to run him into the ground either, because obviously you want him on the floor, but you don't want to run him into the ground. And you have the option of not playing him as much as you did last season, just simply because you've got more depth.
Isaiah Joe has to play, for sure, minimum over half the game.
Absolutely.
So I'm saying your minimum has to be 25.
Yeah.
So that gives you 5 minutes over half. So that means that 25 out of the 40 minutes, he's on the court. I think that's your minimum for him.
And I think you would probably see most games that he plays over that, probably somewhere in the 30 minutes range. Just he's got so many intangibles. Like, he's really good. Like, he's underrated defender, probably led the team in charges last year by far. And is instinctual on the defensive end. And then obviously, like, dude's got in the gym range. So, and he's going to, like, that's your go-to guy.
As it
stands right now, I would say that he's your go-to.
Yes.
Obviously.
He's the only one with experience that is, as Scotty would say, a walking bucket when he steps out onto the court.
I'll disagree with that. Desi's a walking bucket too.
I forgot about Desi. I know you never forget about Desi.
Desi Seals fan club over here.
Yes. I forget about Desi. I know that you never will. But when he had the knee debridement as well, he looked more mobile, like, able to create
afterwards.
He looked like he was able to create off the dribble as well. And if he comes back, you got to believe that's something that he's going to work on, because if you watched games last year, which if you're listening to the podcast, I'm assuming that you watched the games last year, the announcers would harp on that he was mainly a catch and shoot guy.
Yeah.
But towards the end of the season, he was creating his own shot, to where if he keeps progressing like that in the 2020-2021 season, you know, he's not going to be a Mason Jones in the type of creating his shot, but he's going to be able to create his own shot and be able to shoot better than Mason was able to shoot. I mean, because that's just Isaiah Joe.
Yeah, he hears the noise. I think he understands that a lot of people see him more as a catch and shoot. And I wish I had tracked his catch and shoot numbers throughout the entire season. I mean, I might have that in a notebook, but I don't have it with me. But yeah, he hears the noise. Like, he knows he knows that he's got to be able to, when guys close out on him, because they're gonna come at him hard, he's got to be able to attack closeouts, put the ball on the floor, maybe take 4 or 5 dribbles, get into the lane, throw up a floater, or maybe if he's worked on his frame and worked on adding some strength, maybe get to the rim, maybe finish a little bit more efficiently than he did last year. But Moses Moody is another guy that I think comes in and he demands immediate minutes.
With the best basketball number, I think that there is.
With five?
Yeah, I think five is the best basketball number. I don't know why.
What do you think about JD Notte wearing 10? That's pretty, I mean, think about throughout the history of the program, all the guys that have worn 10, like they've been absolute studs.
And most of them are, well, I guess the few that are coming to my mind are big men, but yeah, no, that's a...
What, Ron and Ronnie Brewer both wore it too?
Yeah. And then Portis.
Gafford.
You got to be a stud to wear 10 at the U of A.
Yeah, I saw Daryl Macon tweeted at Devontae Davis the other day when I think Devo put out a graphic of him wearing the number 4. And he's like, you know, I think the number 4 is in good hands, but a lot of responsibility comes with it. I mean, it's the same with 10. And Jalen Barford chimed in with number 0. Who's wearing 0? Oh, it's Justin Smith. So, yeah, I mean,
good stuff.
Jalen Barford says that number zeros are built different. So that's a lot on Justin Smith, I guess.
Anyway, I interrupted you. What were you saying about Moses?
I think he's the highest rated guy in your class. And I see so much Isaiah Joe in him. And I mean, I just think Moses comes in day one and just demands like starter minutes. And so I wonder, like, what's your basement for him in terms of minutes, and then like what's your ceiling? He's like, I think you set a basement and you're like, okay, he hit it. Is he playing well? Keep him in the game the entire time.
Yeah, half the game again. Like,
yeah.
That dude probably needs to, I think. Like, I set the basement for Isaiah Joe at 25. I guess I'll be a little
Moses
more.
Moody only plays 20 minutes. Something's wrong. Like, something's up.
He's in foul trouble or something. Like, dude needs to be in there for a majority of the game. That's why you brought him in. Yeah.
So what are you setting for, like, Desi Sills? What are we thinking? Because I think, like, I put, like, baseline, like, this minutes distribution thing that I sent you the other day. I think this is just, like, baseline. Like, this is what... At a minimum, this guy needs to play. And so I put, at a minimum, Isaiah would play 25, Desi would play 23, Moses would play 23. But obviously, I think those guys, you know, as the year goes on, I think those guys, obviously, I think they play more minutes. Because Desi is one of the few guys, like, you look up and down that roster, Desi and Isaiah have, like, by far have the most experience among, like, the guys who've played at Arkansas before, like, and then you keep going down, like Justin Smith got a ton of experience at Indiana. Yeah, he led Indiana in minutes last year.
You didn't bring a guy in from Indiana to sit him on the bench.
Right, and you didn't bring Vance Jackson in or Jalen Tate in.
That's so hard because...
It's tough.
Can you get away with not playing your freshmen as much and like getting them game experience of, like, hey, you just need to get a little bit of experience. That's why we have these grad transfers in here that are going to play a little bit? Or is it the situation of, if they're even with your grad transfers, why are you playing your grad transfers? You got the kids that are going to be in your program for longer. You brought the grad transfers in for a reason, but I mean, I guess this could be another situation of a Gene Tausilla, of somebody could come in and...
I don't see a Gene Tausilla in this class.
And nothing happened. That's very true. But it could be that there's just so much more talent that somebody else doesn't get to play.
I don't know how to do this, the minutes distribution. I just don't. And I don't like it the way that I've got it. Because, I mean, think like Isaiah Joe, Desi Sills, Moses Moody, Justin Smith, Vance Jackson, Jalen Tate, JD Notte, Connor Vanover, Jalen Williams. Like, we've listed off, I've just listed off like 7 or 8 guys, and I haven't even gotten to KK and Devo yet. It's tough. And I don't feel good about what I've got. Like, I've got KK and Devo at 10 minutes right now. And I feel like those guys are plenty good enough to get 15 to 18. You know what I mean? But I don't know how as of July 9, I don't know how this is going to work. But it's going to play itself out, obviously, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, but we'll see. It's gonna be
tough. It's tricky. It's tricky. Like, I did not feel good after doing this, because I know these guys are plenty good enough or will be plenty good enough to probably get more minutes than what I've got down right now.
Well, when you're looking at the University of Arkansas roster, when you look at the coaches, as we move on now in the basketball podcast, not the basketball podcast of America, the Whole Hog podcast, there's a name that sticks out that's on the coach's side that some people might know because of an unfortunate incident that happened during the middle of the season in which this coaching staffer received a technical, and Musselman was able to point it out that he received the technical. Hayes Myers was the guy that we were talking about. But Scotty caught up with Hayes, and the stuff that he brings to this team is so much more than what you might perceive from the outside. So what did you learn about Hayes, Scotty?
Hayes does a lot. And when I talked to him, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to him was because his title is special assistant to the head coach. I mean, what does that mean?
Right.
I mean, I when I asked him, I was like, I don't want to say that your title is vague, but like, could you like help me out? What does your title mean? And he was like, oh no, it's very vague. He's like, it's very vague. So you're spot on. But a lot of his job revolves around video, and he also assists Michael Musselman and Pat Ackerman in Arkansas's recruiting efforts, like on the recruiting side. And he also helps the grad assistants and the coaching staff create player development plans. And Hayes was basically in charge of like player development at Nevada for some time. And so he says his the role that he's got right now isn't all that different, isn't too much different. It's kind of similar in some ways to what he was doing at Nevada. But one of the things that I found that was really interesting, and I think I texted you and Matt about this right after I talked to him, Hayes went to school at LSU. LSU was the only school that he applied to coming out of high school in Dallas. And a lot of people are probably wondering why he went to LSU. Well, a lot of family from down there. His dad also went to LSU. Hayes was a student basketball manager with the Tigers for 5 seasons. His dad was also a basketball manager for LSU, and he was on that support staff when LSU went to the 1981 Final Four. And Johnny Jones, who we know has got a pretty good relationship with Eric Musselman, he was a freshman guard on that LSU team. And so Hayes's father and Johnny Jones got to know each other a little bit back in the day at LSU, and Hayes got to work under Johnny Jones at LSU. So that's kind of unique. Hayes's father, David, introduced Hayes and Johnny Jones at the Final Four. I think it was in 2010 or 2011. I just kind of introduced them, caught up a little bit. And Eric Musselman really trusts Hayes. And I was kind of let you behind the curtain a little bit. Like the day after that South Carolina game when Hayes got the tech, there were a lot of people that we were around, like writers, that were saying, oh, does Hayes still have a job? Does Hayes still have a job? It's like, has anybody seen Hayes? Anybody know where he is? Is he still around? Of course he was still around. Of course he was still around. And now that I kind of know kind of some of the backstory to Hayes and Eric Musselman's relationship, I mean, I understand why he brought Hayes on at Arkansas, and I understand why Hayes has such an important role on Arkansas staff. So it goes back to, gosh, was it the 2014-15 season? Eric Musselman spent at LSU as an associate head coach. He was brought on by Johnny Jones to kind of create and foster like an NBA-type atmosphere within the program, because I think they had an inkling that Ben Simmons was going to come in the following year, so they kind of wanted to implement that. And then once Ben Simmons got there, you could just kind of throw him into that atmosphere. So Eric Musselman gets to LSU, and he goes to the video coordinator, and he's like, hey, is there anybody that can help me out, you know, with scouting reports? Hayes Myers threw that hand up. He was like, hey, I'll do it. So they spent hours and hours and hours and hours working side by side, putting scouting reports together. And Hayes told me he said he loved being in the office so much, working on those scouting reports, being side by side with Musk, that sometimes, you know, toward the end of that year, that school year that they were working together, him and Musselman were working together, that he wouldn't always go to the classes that he had scheduled because he just wanted to stay in the office with Musk and just work and prep. So that was pretty interesting. And Hayes plays on top of the things that I said earlier about his job. You know, he plays a part in the analytics department. I don't know if you want to call it an analytics department, but he works kind of hand in hand with Clay Moser too. He's got a background in analytics. So he read Musselman when they were at Nevada. He encouraged Hayes to start kind of studying analytics. And so he read Dean Oliver's Basketball on Paper and he got super interested in it. And now he's kind of like the guy that Mus will go to, you know, if he wants to call or if he wants to talk pick and roll coverage or, you know, he entrusts Hayes and Clay Moser with like the math behind the game that can, you know, benefit the team. And also asked Hayes how he got connected, how he ended up going to Nevada. So after the 1 year that Hayes and Eric Musselman spent at LSU, Eric Musselman took the head coaching job at Nevada, but Hayes Meyer still had a year of school left at LSU. So he got to spend that year with Ben Simmons, like with and around Ben Simmons.
Nice.
So that he said that was a pretty fun year. So after that season ends, Hayes is, you know, his time as a basketball manager at LSU is up. So he's already made up his mind that he wants to be in coaching. And so the logical thing to do is start getting a resume together, start asking people if they can be a reference. And he called Eric Musselman. He was like, "Hey coach, can I put you down as a reference?" And then Hayes said an hour later, he got a text from Eric Musselman asking him, he was like, "Hey, why don't you just come be a GA here at Nevada?" And so and they've been together ever since. So it's a
nice.
Pretty interesting story. Sorry, I feel like I talked for 10 minutes straight, but pretty interesting story on a guy that, you know, you don't really know these guys' names because they're more kind of behind the scenes.
Right.
It's kind of like almost, it's kind of similar to a long snapper. The only time that you know a long snapper's name is when he messes up. A lot of people really only knew Hayes' name last year because of the technical that he was assessed during the South Carolina game, and Musk pointed that out afterward. But plays those guys that you don't, the names that, you know, you don't really know, like right off the top of your head, those guys play a pretty integral role in what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. There's so many people that make up the backbone of a program in college or professionally as well that you just don't know about. But those are the people that can make the program run as well. All right, Scotty, we're going to mix things up here. We're going to go to our school of the week. By the way, you can check out Scotty's story on Hayes Myers and the basketball roster notables in the link in the description. So make sure to check out the description wherever you are listening to us there if you want to get some more information on those. But some great insight from Scotty there. All right. This Ivy League has made the news this week, Scotty, because they have decided that they're going to wait until spring to start their fall sports. My question to you, Scotty, is how many Ivy League schools can you name?
No, there's eight.
There are eight schools in the Ivy League. You are correct.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to type this out. All right, Harvard.
You got Harvard.
Yale.
And you got Yale.
Brown.
Brown is one as well.
Columbia.
Columbia is one as well.
Dartmouth.
Yes.
Princeton.
Yes.
I've got six.
You need two more.
I might need a hint.
For one of the schools, if you're a big Office fan, one of the people in the Office attended the school.
Oh, my God, dude. Oh,
Andy.
Andy, uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, Cornell.
Cornell. You have one more.
Okay.
This one, out of all of the schools that are in the Ivy League, this one is the one that comes to my mind the least.
Yeah, obviously mine too. I mean, I know I got Harvard, Yale, Brown, Columbia. I knew Dartmouth because I covered a kid at Fort Smith Northside, Tanner Cross. He went and played. He's playing football at Dartmouth right now.
Nice.
Brilliant kid. So I knew Dartmouth. I forgot about Cornell, Princeton. I feel like it's just going to smack me in the face.
You want a hint?
Yeah.
It starts with a P.
Oh, is it Penn?
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, I forgot about Penn.
That's the one that doesn't seem. So you got all these, like, it's Brown University, Columbia University, Cornell University, Dartmouth University, Harvard, Princeton, Yale. All these are whatever university. And then it's the University of Penn. Mm-hmm. You're the one weird one in the Ivy League. Okay. Their endowments are ridiculous too. Sorry, I'm just looking at how much money.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go and name the mascots of all of these?
Harvard is the Crimson.
Yes.
Yale's Bulldogs.
Yes.
Brown. Bears.
Yep. Nice. I would be lost after those two.
Princeton Tigers.
Correct.
I'm blanking on Dartmouth.
Come back to Dartmouth.
I feel like it's green something.
Wow, that's really good. Just, it's something green.
Not Mean Green.
No. The Mean Green is...
North Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only know they're green. Oh, the Big Green?
The Big Green.
Thanks for the help.
Yeah, no problem.
Dartmouth Big Green.
Well, and then I guess they ran out of mascots for the Ivy League.
Have a clue about Penn.
The smart people. Oh, yes, you do. Think about Pennsylvania for 1 second. This is going to be bad. Stereotypical Pennsylvania.
The Rockies. The Penn fighting Rockies.
No. The Rockies.
Rocky.
Oh. Oh, my gosh. No. Come on. The Ben Franklin. You think of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Ben Franklin. They're the...
$100 bills.
Quakers.
Penn Quakers. Okay.
Which is kind of oxymoronic in itself because Quakers don't fight. And then you go into battle and as a sport.
Cornell Tigers?
Cornell is not the Tigers. They're very original. Think Dartmouth.
Oh, they're Big Red?
Yeah. So I think the only team that you are missing now is
Columbia.
Yeah,
I want to say it's an animal of some sort.
It's the king of the jungle.
Tigers?
No.
Lions.
Yes, even though the lions.
Columbia Lions.
I don't know why we call lions the king of the jungle because they don't live in the jungle, but anyway. Yeah, no, that's an interesting list. So Brown is the Bears, Columbia the Lions. These are not very original. Like Harvard's the Crimson. Three of them are named after colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would not have guessed Quakers.
They have three colors, a Lions, a Tigers, and a Bear, a Bulldog, and a Quaker. Golly, be more original, Ivy League. Do you know who has the most undergrads? So just a quick, before we move on.
Columbia.
Cornell. 15,000. 15,000. Wow. All right. Well, that was our school for the week. Brought to you by the, what's it going to be brought to you by this week? Oh!
Brought to you by the conference that's not playing sports this fall.
That's very true. Or the, you know, I'm going to go off on a little tangent here. The NBA bubble food. Nice grilled cheese sandwiches and grilled vegetables that look terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you haven't seen that, check that out on Twitter. It looks interesting. I've cooked better meals when I was in college and only had a microwave. But alas, I digress. Those poor people in the bubble. They're doing it all for us, Scotty, to give us sports. So.
Mm-hmm. Thank goodness.
Props to them. And they're making millions of dollars. But whatever. All right, moving on. Before we move into baseball, and also get into our clips segment, I was able to catch up with Destiny Slocum, which is, I've been trying to get to her ever since she really decided that she was going to commit.
Yeah. How long ago has that been? I feel like it's been since May.
Yes. Honestly, I think she committed over in April.
Wow.
So it's been a while. Finally got a hold of her and was able to talk to her. She's in Fayetteville now, and you know, she's gone all over. She's from Idaho, then went to Maryland to college for a year, was a freshman All-American, decided to transfer, go to Oregon State for 2 years, and then she's grad transferring to Arkansas. She originally committed to Neighbors at Washington. But she's going to be a unique guard for the women's team. She's able to penetrate into the lane. The women's basketball Twitter put out a video of some of her highlights, which will be in the story in the description as well that you can check out. But she's a dynamic player that is going to be a key addition. She's going to run the point. So now you have two decently good point guards in Jalen Mason, who's coming back, who didn't play last year, and Destiny Slocum. Those are two girls that you're adding to a team that was going to go to the tournament as probably a 7 seed anyway. Neighbors is building something, if not on par, close to what Musselman is building. Musselman just gets all the hype because, well, it's the men's basketball team, and Arkansas was good at men's basketball, and you're kind of bringing it back. But
people are definitely taking notice of what Neighbors and his staff are doing, for sure.
What Neighbors is doing is drawing more attention, and they had the most season tickets sold last year, and they're going for even more season tickets sold this year, so it'll be interesting.
I don't know why they wouldn't sell more than last year.
You got Chelsea Dungy for one more year as well that you can check her out. They did lose Alexis Tolfrey, but you add people like Slocum. Is Jersey Wolfenbarger in this class?
No.
She's in the next one. Okay.
Yep. I mean, you get Amber Ramirez back too.
Yes.
So
it'll be interesting. But that was an interesting story to catch up with her. She's from Idaho. She said, I was trying to fact check this, but it's just hard. She said she's the first McDonald's All-American from the state of Idaho. She's located just outside of Boise.
I'll go for it.
I mean, I trust her right now. Why not? She's located just outside of Boise, went to a big school. But she's really proud of being from Idaho, and she says that she likes Northwest Arkansas. She defined it as cute.
She thinks Northwest Arkansas is cute?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But she also said that one thing that she's not gotten used to is the humidity.
Yeah, she's never going to get used to that. I'm sorry, Destiny.
Yeah, no, you don't. And she also said that there's a lot of chicken tender places up here.
There are. She is not lying about that one. MLK is basically Chicken Row, right?
Yes, especially since Slim moved in there recently. But yeah, we're not going to advertise for anybody on the basketball pod. The Whole Hog podcast had come in. But yeah, no, there's a ton of chicken tender places, and some are better than others. All right, Scotty, let's do this. How this works is we're going to play, what did you call it earlier? Guess That Coach.
Guess That Coach.
But it's really going to be guess who that coach is talking about. As I said, most of these come from, I think all of them come from the same coach. But I'm going to play a clip. Scotty's going to guess who said it and who are they talking about. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. First one. Who is this coach?
Statistically speaking, you wouldn't believe it tonight, but statistically speaking, coming into the game, we foul the least of anybody in the SEC.
Who is that coach, Scotty?
That was your buddy Will Wade.
That is a great Will Wade. I had to play that clip first because all these other ones are going to come from Will Wade as well. But Will Wade had a fantastic press conference where I'm just going to go ahead and play this, where he doesn't really like to let reporters finish. Here, take a look.
Well, what does Witt do so well that gives you
cuts and moves without the ball, and then...
Bob, to the question, have you ever had a team commit 34 fouls? I mean, I know a few of them were at the end.
No.
You outscored them 26-0 on second chance points in Baton Rouge. Tonight, you still outscored them 14-9, obviously a lot better than 26-0 for Arkansas. What did you think of their rebound?
They did a good job, especially early on. You knew they were going to be focused on it. They did a good job early on. They were really boxing us out.
I don't even think Henderson played in Baton Rouge, and tonight I think he had 10 points.
Yeah, played Chaney a lot more. Yeah. You know, Henderson's been playing great. He played.
Bob just got in a after he got cut off.
He's just so upset about getting cut off. But he did that to not only the Arkansas reporters, but also the LSU reporter that was there as well. He just doesn't like to let a guy finish, which when you're always on the run from, never mind, I'm not going to say that.
He was ready to get in and out of that room for sure.
Yes. Yes, he was. All right. So we've got a few more here, Scotty. Let's go to who is Will Wade talking about on this one?
He's done as good a job on Fulkerson as anybody has in that Tennessee game. I think he blocked a shot six times, maybe.
Ethan Henderson.
Okay, that was, yes. You're too good at this, Scott. This is no fun. Yes, talking about Ethan Henderson, which Ethan Henderson did have a fantastic game against Fulkerson.
Yeah,
in Tennessee.
I think he ended up with like two or three blocks against Fulkerson.
So that was obviously after when they were talking about the LSU game. All right, Will Wade, who is he talking about here, Scotty?
He cuts and moves without the ball, and then, you know, when they drive, you sink in, and you just lose him. You know, they do a good job filling him behind, and he's...
Obviously, did you just see that he interrupted Bob on his question, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Who is he talking about there?
Jimmy Witt, probably.
Yes, dadgummit. All right, I got one more here, Scotty, from Will Wade. Who is Will Wade talking about here?
You know, we did a poor job. We lost him in transition. You know, we didn't make him make some of those tough shots. We just lost him in transition, and he made a bunch of layups. But he's a tremendous player.
Oh, he's thinking about this one.
Mason Jones.
Yes.
Mason Jones went for like 1,000,000 points in that game. So it makes sense that he was talking about Mason.
Yes, he did. I was hoping on the Jimmy Witt one that you would think it was Mason Jones.
No.
Because it kind of sounds like, you know, you lose him in transition and just didn't play. But no, you got him all right. Mr. Basketball Savant over there gets him all right, even though we've been, what, removed 4 months from five months from that game?
Yeah, four months on Saturday.
Ridiculous. Anyway, yes, so that was Will Wade. Thanks again for playing Guess That Coach, which was really more Guess the Coach talking about the players, which Scotty, of course, nailed. I'm going to have to make these harder somehow.
Bring it.
I'm going to go to like the Big West Conference. Be like, who's he talking about here, Scotty? And Scotty will probably get him right anyway. All right. As we wrap up the Whole Hog Podcast today, we've got an update on the top 10 Razorbacks to play in the MLB, along with the story that Scotty wrote about Eric Hinsky. Scotty, what did you learn about the unique Eric Hinsky?
I found out that the guy is basically good luck almost anywhere that he goes. I mean, think about it, from 2007 to 2009, he played in three straight World Series, and he won a World Series title with the Red Sox, and then won one with the Yankees. And the year that he didn't win a World Series in 2008 with the Rays, he hit a home run. And I think in game four, I think it was a pinch hit home run he hit in game four. He said he remembers hitting it off Joe Blanton, hit it off the bricks in center field. And he said he felt like he was, you know, just floating around the bases. Like, did this just really happen? And so he hits that home run ball in 2008, and the next game he ends up striking out to end the World Series in game five. And so he remembers those two games in particular. But hits that home run ball in 2008. Earlier this summer, I think it was in early June, he did an interview with the Diamondbacks BP show. I think it was with 98.7 FM in Arizona. Someone shipped him that home run ball back.
Oh, that's cool.
12 years after the fact. Which is really neat. He said he was, in that interview, he said that he was sitting in his office going through his emails, and there was one email that kind of stuck out to him. And he ended up, you know, whoever had that ball shipped it back in like a bobblehead box of some random player, and he got his ball back 12 years later, or almost 12 years later. So that was pretty unique. And I didn't get a chance to like actually interview Eric Hinsky. Trust me, I tried.
Yeah, I feel that.
And so I found a couple of interviews that he had done on YouTube. And I think it was in 2016, he was kind of talking about how he ended up at Arkansas and what his time at Arkansas was like. And so Arkansas sent its hitting coach at the time, Doug Clark, up to Menasha, Wisconsin, which is Hinsky's hometown. And they got him to come down on a recruiting trip. He says, hold on, let me read this quote. It's fantastic. He basically said, I got off the plane and did a little roundabout view of the campus, and they had some of the Diamond Doll girls take me around. I was like, wow, this place is pretty cool. I'm in. And then for 3 years, I mean, in his Arkansas, I think he ranks in the top 10 in like 7 career batting records at Arkansas. He hit like 348 for his career. And remember Norm DeBrine said that as a freshman, he hit a home run to the power alleys, like 385 to one of the power alleys. And Norm DeBrine said he remembers Eric Hinsky just like running around the bases about as fast as humanly possible. I imagine it was another one of those instances where he's just like adrenaline's pumping and can't feel anything. Probably one of those situations where he blacked out.
Right.
Running around the bases, but pretty interesting story on Eric Hinsky. You know, he was part of the Chicago Cubs staff when they won the World Series in 2016. So you think about it, he's been on 4 World Series teams and he's got 3 rings to show for it. Nice. And I found an interview too that his parents did with the TV station in Green Bay, and his dad said that he's a good luck charm. And so that's kind of how I led the story off. I thought it turned out to be a pretty interesting story, I thought.
I thought it was really good as well.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Just to give you an update on the list. So number 10 is Dick Hughes, who played with the Cardinals, but I'm blanking on who he played with. I mean, it's one of the most famous pitchers of the Cardinals.
Who's that?
Dick Hughes.
Dick Hughes. Yeah. He pitched for the Cardinals.
Who did he play with? He only played 1 year for the Cardinals and before he ended up hurting himself, but he won a World Series that year. The pitcher that was a part of the rotation as well. I'm totally blanking on this. Is that
Oh, I'm pulling it up. It's Bob Gibson.
Bob Gibson.
And Steve Carlton.
Yes. Sorry. Why did I just go blank on that? But yes. So he was a part of that pitching staff. So that was pretty cool. Andrew Benintendi, which, like Scotty, I really tried to get to talk to him, and the Red Sox told me no multiple times. So that's fun.
I emailed the Diamondbacks, and they got back with me pretty quick. And they said, yeah, we'll run this by him, see what he says. So I followed up and said, we're hoping. I followed up probably 4 or 5 days later and was like, hey, I just wanted to see if he's available. And I mean, this would probably take 15 minutes.
Right.
And they said, we're hoping to have an answer for you by the end of the day or tomorrow. And I never heard back from them. So thank goodness for those interviews on YouTube.
For sure. Coming in at number 8 is the catcher for the White Sox currently, James McCann. Then 7 is Eric Hinsky.
If we do this list over again, maybe 10 years, James McCann is going to move way up the list.
Yeah, you can see, because those are 2 guys that are still active right now. There's 3 guys that are on the list that are still active. Benintendi, McCann, and then Scotty wrote about Eric Hinsky at number 7. Number 6 is Jeff King. Number 5 is Tom Pagnozzi. 4, Kevin McReynolds. 3, Johnny Ray. 2 is Dallas Keuchel, which is the other one that is still active currently.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you pay attention at all, you might know who number 1 is.
There's a good chance you probably know who it is.
He might be from Benton, Arkansas.
Could be.
But yes, that'll be out as well. You make sure to check that out on wholehogsports.com. But that was a really fun series. You've heard some interesting stories from some of the people as well about just baseball back then. And it all started out, interestingly enough, when we had to replace one of them. So y'all heard that story last week. If you haven't, I encourage you to go back and listen to last week's Whole Hog Pod.
I've got one other thing on Hinsky. So Matt got some feedback from Norm DeBrine on this series, and he sent me the clip. Matt sent me the clip of DeBrine talking about Eric Hinsky. I'm just going to read this. I thought it was really funny. He said, Norm DeBrine said of Eric Hinsky, he said he really believed in himself. I remember that. Even on signing with the Cubs, I got a call from the scouting director saying, do you want Hinsky back? And I said, yeah, boy, it'd be nice to have him back here. I guess in negotiations that night, he told Jim Henry, who was the GM, let's get this crap out of the way. Give me $40,000 and I'll sign.
Let's get this crap out of the way.
Hinsky said, you know, after when he got drafted, when he initially got drafted, he said he thought he was going to go in rounds 6 to 8, you know, that he figured he would fall there. And he ended up going like the 17th round, I think. And so initially Hinsky was like, hell, I'm just going to go back to school. Like he was kind of upset with kind of his drop in the draft. He was going to go back to school, but his grandfather, who had a pretty big, who was pretty influential with him, growing up, he said his grandfather stepped in and he said, I play for free. You're being irrational. Go sign, go play. You get a year older, they'll forget about you. Dang. So he signed. And then he went and I think he started playing short season A-ball. And he played, 4 years in the majors? And then his first year in the majors, he's 2002 AL Rookie of the Year.
Nice.
Pretty interesting story.
Very interesting indeed. Encourage you to go check out the links in the description and go to wholehogsports.com if you want to listen to, or not listen, if you want to read the entire top 10 Razorbacks in the MLB series. All right, Scotty, anything else?
Good, man. All right. It's good to be back in here again.
It is good to be back in here again. Well, for Scotty Bordelon, I almost messed up your last name, man. Let's try that.
Sorry, it wouldn't be the first time someone's messed up my last name.
For Scotty Bordelon and the entire Whole Hog Sports crew, I am Seth Gamble saying so long, and we will see you back here.